It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We also know that the Secretary of State and the Attorney General have already tweeted out that your legal arguments are rubbish and you're going to lose when it comes to court. So we're not worried about that at all. I'm also not worried about any of your, things are bad so we can't certify arguments, because that's just ridiculous. You certified in August when they were worse. Less than 50% of the ballots were recountable. Now over 72% are. 58% of them were even balanced when it was less than 30% last time. So it's doubled. It's gotten way better because the Secretary of State actually jumped in and did her job, unlike you. But I know it's not going to change your opinion. You talked about not certifying Detroit, even though you acknowledged that Livonia, a city, by the way, I know you know is 95% white, had bigger variances than Detroit, which is 80% black. We understand, and you've now added your name. So I'm not going to try to change your mind. I just want to let you know that the Trump stink, the stain of racism that you, William Hartman, and Monica Palmer have just covered yourself in, is going to follow you throughout history. Your grandchildren are going to think of you like Bull Connor or George Wallace. Monica Palmer and William Hartman will forever be known in southeastern Michigan as two racists who did something so unprecedented that they disenfranchised hundreds of thousands of black voters in the city of Detroit because they were ordered to. Probably, I know, Monica, you think Q told you to do it or some other crazy stuff like that. But just know, when you try to sleep tonight, that millions of people around the world now on Twitter know the name Monica Palmer and William Hartman as two people completely racist and without an understanding of what integrity means or a shred of human decency. The law isn't on your side. History won't be on your side. Your conscience will not be on your side. And Lord knows, when you go to meet your maker, your soul is going to be very, very warm.
All right, so who is that theologian speaking, and what is he speaking about? Well, that theologian, not, is Ned Stabler. He's the Vice President for Economic Development at Wayne State University, and he's the President and CEO of TechTown, Detroit's most established business incubator and accelerator, so says his bio. And who's he talking to and threatening and calling a racist and saying that, you know, when you die, you know, you're going to have this stain on you? Who is he talking about? He's talking about Wayne County Board of Canvassers members, Chairwoman Monica Palmer, and her fellow GOP member, William Hartman. Now, the story is this, and you remember, because we've talked about this for several days here, that it came time to certify the votes in Wayne County, which includes Detroit. And Monica and William felt like they could not certify because there were so many problems with the votes. And so then ensues these veiled threats from not only the gentleman you just heard, but also from Abraham Aish, talking about their children. And we know where they go to school, right? They're at this school, right? And so then they changed their minds and decided to certify those votes in Detroit, because some say maybe they might have possibly felt threatened. And then suddenly, about 24 hours ago, 36 hours ago, they changed their minds again. All right. Well, it's a mystery as to what's going on there. I've told you some of it, but I'm not on the inside. Our next guest is a former state senator, Pat Kolbeck from the great state of Michigan, has joined us again, and he is in the middle of this. So, Pat, thanks for joining us. And what was that all about?
Well, in fairness, the Democrats are the experts on racism. They're the party of the KKK and Jim Crow laws. So, you know, we got to hand that to them. But I'll tell you, I was actually present at that Wayne County Board of Canvassers meeting, and it wasn't just them making those accusations. It was the vice chair, Clintock, I think was his name, that made the first accusation of racism, all because Monica singled out Detroit. And Detroit's not the only black community in Wayne County, first and foremost. So for them to go off and try to do the old race card again on them, I was ready to reach over the plexiglass and reorient his thinking. Because this was a case where in the city of Detroit, 71% of the precinct in the absentee voter precinct were not balanced. And what do we mean by unbalanced? When they're unbalanced, it means that the number of people who are supposed to have voted for the poll book, now those are the eligible voters in the city of Detroit, did not match the number of ballots that were cast. And when that happens, it's called an unbalanced precinct. And when it's unbalanced, you can't do a recount. And 71% is huge. I've got clerks in my old Senate district that would not go to sleep until 0% of their precincts were unbalanced. It's an invitation to voter fraud when you have an unbalanced precinct, because if you can get to the point where you stuff the tabulator with enough ballots that support your candidate, you're free and clear, because those votes are there for in perpetuity. A recount's not going to go off and take them off the books. And that's what they're counting on. And so that's what this is all about. They want to hide the fact that they mismanaged the election. Now, I want to highlight the purpose of a board of canvasser or of the board of canvassers is simply to verify the proper completion of records related to the election. They had ample evidence to suggest that that was not accomplished in this election, particularly in the city of Detroit. So the no to certification was exactly the right choice, and it's long overdue, and I'm proud of them.
You know what, Pat, I want just to underscore what you're saying. Russ Ramsland is, I don't know his bio, but he is someone who's going around the country analyzing what's happening in various, I don't know if he's working for the Trump campaign, but in some capacity, he's trying to verify who's actually voting and what the stats are. And he weighed in on what's happening. He was in Michigan at the time. Let's listen to this clip about what Russ Ramsland, how he analyzes what's happening in Michigan. Let's listen.
We have been out looking mostly at Michigan. We're getting ready to start turning our sights towards Pennsylvania and Georgia. You know, the things that you find in Michigan are amazing. There are over 3,000 precincts where the presidential votes cast compared to the estimated voters from the SOS is 99% all the way up to 350%. Those kind of numbers don't exist in the real world. So where did all those votes come from? And in looking at that, we've gone back and we've looked at some of these huge vote dumps that were mostly by, we call them spikes. We've gone back and traced the spikes. We've seen where they were cast. They're primarily in four counties. We've looked at how long it took to cast those votes. And we've looked at the equipment that exists at all those locations by serial number. And the fact of the matter is, we can't see any physical way possible for some of those votes to have been in those kind of numbers, because they just don't have the equipment that could produce it that time.
All right, so that kind of that gives us some perspective from another source. Monica Palmer and William Hartman then they decided not to certify after all those threats, veiled threats about their children, where they went to school, but they changed their minds last night. So, Pat, I think
did certify it, by the way. I mean, they talked about it in the meeting, but they never affixed their signature to it. They use a rubber stamp to go off and affix their signature.
Okay, so then they heard that the Secretary of State, who they had asked to do some sort of a canvas or a recount or something, an audit, basically said, wow, I don't have to do that. And so, and she's a Democrat. So now what happens? I mean, really, now what happens?
Yeah, well, first of all, she didn't want to audit it because she knew that she would be verifying the same concerns that William Hartman and Monica Palmer had in the first place. That's why she refused to do an audit. I can tell you, as somebody who actually was there with Monica and Bill Hartman, they were in serving the capacity of poll challenger at the Detroit 80 County Board with me on election night, and they saw the rampant interference with election integrity that happened there. They cannot verify chain of custody, which means that you can't verify vote tallies, you can't verify ballots, you can't verify poll book content or the qualified voter content. You cannot verify chain of custody. So what happens now is that this goes up to the State Board of Canvassers, and the State Board of Canvassers is going to take a look at what happened in Wayne County and say, we can't certify the state. At least the Republicans are going to say that. We can't certify the state because of these reasons. And if you can't certify in the state, then it goes to the legislature, and the legislature when it comes to the presidential electors, is going to have the option to submit a joint resolution to allocate those electors. Now, in parallel with that track, that's the kind of the legal track that we're going on right now. In parallel, there's some court cases that are going on. And so any one of those court cases could lead to some sort of order from a judge to take a specific course of action. We don't know what that is yet. So there's both a state thread and a federal thread. So bottom line is, this is keep your seatbelt on and keep your hands and feet in the ride at all times, because this is going to be taking us into places we've never gone before.
Pat, what's the vote difference between Donald Trump and what's his name? Joe Biden. President-elect Biden, as he likes to call himself. Do you know what the vote spread
Mr.
is now?
Pretend. Yeah, it's 146,123. And I'm telling you that we've already traced evidence that suggests that at least 140,000 is modified via direct algorithmic data manipulation, which indicates some sort of computer manipulation. The other part of it, we know that we've probably got around 8,000 dead people that voted. I admire their dedication to the electoral process, but that's something that we need to be calling attention to. There's all kinds of kind of penny-ante, onesie-twosie stuff that starts adding up to the point where we believe Donald Trump actually won a landslide win here in Michigan. And just further evidence, there's 8.1 million people in Michigan that voted. Only 7.8 million are actually eligible. That's a 300,000 vote difference right there against the 146,123 vote margin that they're currently bookkeeping.
How
so this
can that
election
be?
Was stolen. It was stolen, and we're going to prove it, and we're working hard to go off and document it. So now it's a race between the media saying that Joe Biden's the president pretend, and then everybody else going off and making sure we get the truth that comes out through the court system, through the legal process. Once we get the truth coming out, I'm very confident that we got those 16 electoral college votes going to President Trump, and we believe that this same cheat method that they're using here in Michigan was used in other states as well.
Let me be practical for a second, because you've established a website where you're putting up information all the time and articles. It's called letsfixstuff.org. Letsfixstuff.org.
Yeah.
And that's a great resource, not just for people in Michigan, but anyone who's following this. How many electoral votes in Michigan?
There's 16. And I'm glad you brought up Russ Ranzlin. He's an expert. I've had a chance to talk to him specifically about how Dominion voting systems work. And I've actually got a piece at letsfixstuff.org that talks about Dominion voting. It's called Dominion Voting Unwrapped. And then there's also some detailed posts on how exactly technology can be used to subvert the integrity of the election. And that's why this term chain of custody is so important. Sometimes we just focus on seeing ballots and lock and key in a little storage box or whatever, move from point to point, and we think we got chain of custody. I mean, a lot of the voting information nowadays is actually connected electronically, and that's why you may recall, I think we talked about this last time, I was so concerned about the fact that our tabulators in Detroit at the AV County Board were connected to the Internet. You're connected to the Internet, some guy in a shack out in the middle of Australia or Antarctica could be going off and playing with our election.
Yep.
They are not secure. They have hacker conferences designed specifically to break in to networks like that, and manipulate the votes.
Okay.
And so, big concern.
So letsfixstuff.org, and that's where you can find out more detail than we have time to get into. I have a quick question, because we got to go out here. John James, are we just checking votes for presidency or everything down ballot?
I've got volunteers all across the state. First priority right now is to nail down the presidency and get that data. The next step that they're going to be doing is capturing all the data we need to analyze what happens for U.S. Senate, then congressional races. Keep in mind, last time I checked, we're only 14 seats behind the U.S. House. That means 7 seats. If we flip them,
that's right.
We're back in the saddle there. And we're seeing 2 seats in Michigan that could flip, and who knows what's going on with the other battleground states once we get to the truth.
This is amazing. Senator Pat Kolbeck, letsfixstuff.org. That's what's going on in Michigan. Pat, thanks again for your time, and I'm sure we'll be talking soon. Sandy Rios in the Morning, AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Zuckerberg, for the second time in 3 weeks, You've been hauled before the Senate committee so my Republican colleagues can beat you up over claims that your platforms are supposedly biased against conservatives. The fact of the matter is that these allegations are completely baseless. Everyone who has systematically looked at the content of social media, from Media Matters to the Cato Institute to former Republican Senator John Kyle, has found absolutely no evidence of anti-conservative bias. And data from Proud Tangle show that far-right content from the likes of Fox News, Ben Shapiro, David Bongino dominates the daily top 10 most engaged pages on Facebook. So all of these allegations about the fact that you hire or all of your employees are left of center is relevant of nothing. Certainly not relevant of some sort of anti-conservative bias in terms of your content moderation. So the way I see it, this hearing is a transparent effort by my Republican colleagues to work the rest. And unfortunately, in my view, it is working. 2 weeks ago, the Washington Post reported that Facebook has bent over backwards to avoid claims that it was biased against conservatives, and it removed a strike against Donald Trump Jr.'s Instagram account that would have penalized him as a repeat offender. Apparently, one of several strikes removed from the accounts of Trump family members. Pro-Trump's Super PAC American First Action was allowed to post material rated false.
Oh, I feel so much better after hearing that from Mazie Hirono. She is the senator from Hawaii, and she was at that tech hearing yesterday for the, before the Senate Judiciary Committee, when the heads of Twitter and Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg and Jack Dorsey, were asked questions. But according to Mazie, conservatives have nothing to fear. We have free reign on social media. There's nothing to see here. This is just all kind of made up stuff. But maybe not. And I think Dan Gaynor might have another opinion. Dan is the Vice President of Media Research Center Tech Watch. He is all things tech, and I always appreciate his time because I think he's been doing interviews solidly for like 36 hours. But Dan, thanks for joining us. And I'm guessing you monitored this thing pretty closely.
Yeah, and in fact, I watched as she made that really ridiculous speech. It's hard to explain to people who don't grasp the basics of media bias in other platforms, how media might be biased in this platform. So it's tough for her because she doesn't understand. She lives in a bubble. It's very easy to live in America in a bubble if you're liberal. You listen to liberal music, you watch liberal entertainment, TV shows, movies, you watch liberal news, you read liberal news, and you never encounter conservative stuff, and then you're stunned when you look on Facebook and realize people are reading conservative stuff. There's a New York Times tech columnist, Kevin Ruiz, who does this daily list that she was drawing some of her information from, and he's furious that people read Bongino and Ben Shapiro and Newsbusters and Daily Caller and Breitbart. And why do people read this? Well, the reason for it is the traditional media are so wildly, ridiculously anti-American, anti-conservative biased that people went online and invested a lot of time and money. And so we're still able to access information online. They haven't completely censored us yet. But that's what they want to do. And so the idea that there's no problem here is ludicrous. The whole foundation for the hearing yesterday, foundation was the fact that Twitter and Facebook censored the Hunter Biden story.
I heard that interaction with, I just heard a little clip of a senator from Tech Cornyn from Texas, and he basically said to Jack Dorsey, you understand that because you censored that Hunter Biden story that was published by New York Post, that you actually embellish. I mean, you may cause that story to be, spread abroad. And Jack Dorsey said, oh, yes, we realize it was a mistake. I know that's just a clip out of context. But honestly, Dan, do you think the point was ever made that that story actually needed to be shared? It wasn't like it got out of hand and you helped it get out of hand. That really wasn't the point, was it? That's not our point.
Yeah, no, the problem, and here's the real problem, I make it simple for people who don't spend a lot of time on tech. New York Post came out with a story showing that, alleging that that Hunter Biden was tied as icky and possibly criminal financial dealings with China, certainly controversial financial dealings with China, and brought in his father into those, and been charged, basically that Biden knew all about this. And that story came out with emails and everything, and Facebook immediately announced that they were going to restrict the spread of the story. And then Twitter followed by censoring the story. You couldn't even post the story. The New York Post account was restricted, locked down until they would delete the story, and anybody who posted it was suspended, including one of my coworkers, Curtis Houck. Well, here's what that meant, because they ended up suspending New York Post 17 days because the Post refused to delete their initial tweet. If the election ends the way it's trending right now, not looking good for the president, then big tech, Twitter and Facebook fixed the presidential election. And here's what I mean by that. We did a poll of Biden voters. We had McLaughlin and Associates, respected polling firm, reach out to Biden voters. 36% of them said they didn't know about this story. 4.6% of them, enough to have switched the electoral result to 289 for Donald Trump, 4.6% of them said they would have changed their vote. But because not only did big tech censor the story, but then big journalism never got involved to cover it to make up for that. Because that's the history of journalism. When different outlets get censored, other outlets pick up. They didn't in this case because they didn't want to, because it made Biden look bad.
Did anyone in the hearing bring this up? Did they make the point you're making, even if they didn't necessarily refer to Media Research Center?
We came out with this last week that no one in the hearing made the point. I wrote this up again yesterday for Fox, so it actually got Fox gave it extraordinarily good play on the website.
Good for it.
And I say that, they moved it all around and kept moving it up throughout the day to give it more prominence. So I'm very happy about that. At least we were able to get the word out. But meanwhile, the point I made in my piece, it worked. But at least as of right now, it appears that Jack Dorsey and Mark Zuckerberg's companies were able to fix a presidential election.
So nobody actually, no one actually, I'm going to repeat the question. No one actually made that point yesterday?
Not that specific point, not based on our polling, no.
Okay, all right. Well, not based on your polling, but all right. Let me, and further into that then, is this whole thing, this is one thing that Josh Hawley brought up. He and Ted Cruz seem to be the most savvy about technology, maybe Mike Lee also.
And Marshall Blackburn.
So Josh asks Mark Zuckerberg about something I don't think he expected to be asked about, and that was this thing called tasks, which kind of relates to what you just said, that they coordinated to remove this article, but now there's this thing called tasks. Explain this.
Well, tasks apparently is a sort of a internal management system, how they decide, handle actions that they take internally, because it's an enormous company and a lot of people are working remotely. But he was pointing out that there's mentions of Google and Twitter on the Facebook task bar, of the task list. And he said a former Facebook employee had leaked this to them. And, now a lot of big tech people are saying, oh, there's nothing there. There's no story there because, it's just showing that they mention them. But what Josh Hawley hammered Zuckerberg on repeatedly is trying to ask for and get commitments of proof. Like, okay, you say this doesn't show coordination, that you only coordinate on security matters. But here, this apparently is an archive. So give me all the examples of times where you've talked in this, in this task management tool about Google and Twitter. And Zuckerberg would not commit to that. So, my years of journalism, I'm always suspicious when important people won't firmly commit to something, especially when they're talking to you on under oath.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to play, just for a second, another stunning exchange between Josh Hawley and Mark Zuckerberg. Josh hit him with something I don't think he saw was coming, and I want to know your thoughts about this exchange. Let's listen, Adam.
Sentra is a tool that Facebook uses to track its users, not just on Facebook, but across the entire internet. Sentra tracks different profiles that a user visits, their message recipients, their linked accounts, the pages they visit around the web. Mr. Zuckerberg, how many accounts in the United States have been subject to review and shut down through Sentra?
Senator, I do not know because I'm not actually familiar with the name of that tool. I'm sure that we have tools that help us with our platform and community integrity work, but I am not familiar with that name.
Do you have a tool that does exactly what I've described and that you can see here over my shoulder? Or are you saying that that doesn't exist?
Senator, I'm saying that I'm not familiar with it.
All right, so Dan, do you okay, to make that, first of all, this thing that Josh brought up, Sentra, no one was prepared to discuss. And do you think that there's any way Mark Zuckerberg was unaware that he had a program that was tracking people who were users across platforms, you know, getting into their personal lives? Do you think he really doesn't know that?
Oh, no, I'm sure he knows that because, I mean, I'm sure it's done. I can tell you, speaking personally, as someone who spends a lot of time on social media on various platforms, I will interact with someone on one, and then magically another will promote it. You know, we'll like, oh, okay, you want to friend this person? I'll talk to somebody on Twitter or LinkedIn, and the next thing I know, Facebook is suggesting that I friend that person. So I know that the tools exist. I mean, it's very obvious that the AI is analyzing that. I don't know, how it's doing it, whether it's, following links. I'm not familiar. I imagine if I dumped all of my constantly deleted everything that my computer remembered, it wouldn't do that, but then it wouldn't be as useful for me. So I mean, I'm sure he knows that, but maybe he doesn't know the particular name of the tool. But yes, this Josh Hawley didn't really so much ask questions as do the interrogation.
Yeah.
I'm not complaining about that. It was pretty awesome to watch.
Yeah. Listen, we only have a few minutes left, unfortunately, and I have some important questions I want to ask you. I know Section 230 is the protective clause that's kept these guys from being able to be sued because they claim they have immunity. Candace Owens, by the way, has just filed a lawsuit against Facebook fact checkers for defamation. So that'll test 230. But was that kind of a part of the purpose of this hearing yesterday to try to remove Section 230 protections?
Yeah, there was a lot of talk about that. There's talk about it on both sides of the aisle. Here's the problem. Democrats want to remove Section 230 because they're angry at companies, particularly Facebook, because they won't delete conservative content. Republicans want to remove 230 because they want to delete conservative content. So there's no discussion at all of anybody deleting liberal content. I mean, except for the most extreme, there's one site, World Socialist Website, that complains about being restricted online. But they're, other than them, this is just not ever brought up on the left. It's not a problem for the left. They work hand in glove in concert with traditional media to silence anybody they don't like on the right.
All right, so then I have to ask you, we have to speculate. We still have an election in the balance. Joe Biden prevails. What can we expect out of social media?
Well, it's a little unclear, except, of course, that a lot of the big tech people already look like they're working in the transition team for Biden. So will he go after them? The only one that I think is most vulnerable is Facebook, because they're angry because Facebook, they consider it to be a conservative site, because even Facebook admits it has more conservative people on it than it has employees. And, they want to silence conservative speech. Also look for them to try to come up with some sort of government or global initiative about hate speech, which would then overturn the First Amendment and allow them to control all sites online, including Parler.
All right, so the other flip side, if President Trump should take back the White House and prevail, Section 230, then it looks like this. Let's assume then the Senate would be taken by the Republicans. The House is really at a precipice right now. What do you think would happen? Would Section 230, you think, be at that point repealed? And what kind of accountability?
Well, it would be repealed, but I think you'd see executive action against the big tech companies. I think the FCC would move more aggressively against them. And the other thing you'd see more of is, you know, antitrust action against these companies.
Well, I just think common sense says that if they're moving on this trajectory of censorship, it's only going to get worse. And and this will embolden them. I don't know how we could see that any other way, that it would just, what would stop them from viciously removing, you know, all conservatives from their platforms? Who's going to complain about that? And who's going to have the power to do anything about it? Just a brief answer, Dan, to that.
Well, I mean, that's why everybody's organized. We've got more than 70 conservative organizations in the Free Speech Alliance trying to speak with one voice so we can fight it.
Yep, and AFA is a part of that through my body. Okay, Free Speech Alliance. Dan Gaynor, Vice President of Media Research Center, also the head of Tech Watch. Dan, thank you so much, and God bless you for all of your diligence on this topic. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I can hardly wait to put forth all the evidence we have collected on Dominion, starting with the fact it was created to produce altered voting results in Venezuela for Hugo Chavez, and then shipped internationally to manipulate votes for purchase in other countries, including this one. It was funded by money from Venezuela and Cuba, and China has a role in it also. So if you want to talk about foreign election interference, we certainly have it now. We have staggering statistical evidence. We have staggering testimony from witnesses, including one who was personally in briefings when all of this was discussed and planned, beginning with Hugo Chavez and how it was designed there, and then saw it happening in this country. As soon as the state shut down on election night and stopped counting, those are the states where the most egregious problems occurred.
All right. Our favorite attorney, she's becoming mine, certainly, Sidney Powell. That was an excerpt from an interview she did earlier in the week with Lou Dobbs. And I want to stop it with that point she was making, that this Dominion voter system is a product of Cuban money. It was the, according to Sidney, according to her sources, and she has some great sources, it was created to help Hugo Chavez prevail in Venezuela. Well, all right, I don't know much about this. I do trust Sidney's word, but I know someone who does know a great deal about Central and South America, and his name is Mike Waller. Mike is a senior analyst for strategy at the Center for Security Policy, and his areas of concentration are propaganda, political warfare, psychological warfare, and subversion. He's an former instructor at the Naval Postgraduate School. He's an instructor, lecturer at the John F. Kennedy Special Warfare Center and School at Fort Bragg. And so, Mike, thanks for joining us. We so appreciate it.
Well, it's good to be with you again, Sandy, and to talk about this really serious constitutional crisis that we're facing that could be brought on by foreign agents.
Yeah, it really is amazing, Mike. And let me just lay down right now that I'm still optimistic, because this is so egregious that I just, my mind cannot wrap itself around the fact that our the people in this country who have the power, the levers of power, would do nothing about this. I think they must, and I think they should, and I still believe that they will. I'll say, so Mike, you are not part of Dominion, you're not part of the story that Sidney told, but you know a great deal about Cuba and their intelligence agencies and about Central and South America. So that's what I want to talk to you about. Sidney has said that this money was funded by money from Venezuela, Cuba, and she said China also has a role. We'll save that for another day. But what did that conjure up in your mind? How could that possibly be? Cuba's so small, it's this little island. How can that possibly be?
Well, It's kind of like saying Israel is so small that it's not an important country. when
good point.
If you're a small country, you really have to scrap to survive, especially if others want to get rid of your regime or your system, whether you're a good government or a bad one. And in the case of Cuba, I mean, that regime hasn't been around for, you know, since 1959 because it's been soft. It has used every resource possible to survive. And so its only real export for cash is being a transshipment center for narcotics and selling intelligence and subversive activity. And this is what Cuba appears to have done in this case, where you had this movement, even among Western liberals, to say, you know, democracy, you know, before everything else. It's really process that matters. So how best to exploit that system when the Castro model of violent revolution no longer works, thanks to President Reagan? And what they came up with was to subvert the democratic movements, not simply the old-fashioned way with your regular voter fraud and ballot stuffing done manually and bribery and other things, but with the advent of electronic voting and electronic tabulation of voting, how could the Cubans make it work for them? And the Cuba's never been a cyber power, but it has allies who are. And in the case of Venezuela, which back then, you know, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, was a sophisticated and prosperous society, Hugo Chavez needed the democratic fig leaf to get the votes needed to create his socialist dictatorship. So he did this with Dominion voting systems and their Smartmatic software.
You know, I need to explain something. Sometimes I think, Mike, people like you and me, who have been around for a long time and followed some of these, we sort of lived some of this and had a more of a up-close personal view of the communist regimes and how this all came about. I just need to say that Cuba, small as it is, was controlled by the Soviet Union. And that's why, because they're so close to our shores, the Soviet Union spent a lot of time beefing up Fidel Castro. And it became a power in its own right and nearly became the avenue of our demise through the missiles from Russia. Okay, so Russia finally, you know, their powers waned after the 80s. But Cuba maintained its influence in Central and South America and really became a powerhouse. And what I also need to say, because I have talked about Venezuela a lot on this program, but not recently, that the Cubans, many think that the Cubans are pulling the levers in Venezuela with Maduro also, and that they are like the source of power and strength of that dictatorship. Would you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, the Venezuelan dictatorship could not have survived without the Cuban Secret Service and their army special ops groups installed and actually wearing Venezuelan military uniforms. So they got to a point where even the top Venezuelan generals could not meet with the president of the country. It was either Hugo Chavez or then Maduro, who rules today, without going through Cuban bodyguards and security. So you had a complete takeover of the Venezuelan security apparatus by this KGB-trained Cuban secret police system.
Well, and ironically, you point out in your article, I found this interesting. By the way, we'll put your article on our Facebook page. Possible Cuban regime involvement with U.S. election machines cast doubt on integrity of America's votes. You point out in your article something I never thought about, Mike, and that is that Cuba's intelligence service learned from the Soviet KGB. And of course, the KGB has, I would say, waned. It's reconfigured. It's not the powerhouse that it once was, but I think that's fair to say. And then, but you say that Cuba's intelligence agency has been seamless. So they've built on that powerhouse abilities of the KGB. And there's more to say about that.
Exactly.
Please do fill in blanks.
Yeah, and they improved on it too, because a long time ago, you know, the KGB would only try to recruit people who were controllable. And total assets for the most part. What Castro did was very different. He started recruiting American radical activists who were really not controllable, but he knew that he would always act, they would always act in his interest. So he would bring them down to Cuba. This was more than 50 years ago, and it's been going on several times a year ever since, for 50 years, bringing down thousands of Americans who hate our government, hate our way of life, hate our constitutional founding principles, and who support socialism and communism. And his purpose of the running these brigades called the Venceremos Brigades, or We Will Win Brigade, was to bring them to Cuba, show them a good time, have them work in some sacrificial team spirit, you know, team building thing to do something to support the revolution, and then indoctrinate them and assess those who would be, who have talents, like a talent scout for you know, athletics or acting or whatever, a talent scout, and then begin to cultivate and recruit them as agents. And this has been going on for 50 years.
Yeah, so okay, the, so the, name the some names.
Oh,
name
well,
some names, because they're famous names.
Today, that... I think there's Congresswoman Karen Bass of California. She's been doing this since the early 1970s. And she's been, in turn, acting as a talent scout for the Cuban government to bring American community organizers and so-called anti-racist activists and all of these others to Cuba for the purpose of indoctrinating them and recruiting them into the service of the Cuban spy agency, the Cuban KGB.
And so, but here now is the point.
She was one of the top picks to be the running mate for Joe Biden.
Well, that's what I was hoping you would add. Yeah, so that's the story. Bottom line of that is Joe Biden actually came very close to selecting her for his vice presidential candidate. And just to be clear, Karen is one of the people for decades has gone down to Cuba, and they've been indoctrinating Americans to carry their water for communism in this country. There are other famous names. Shall we say Bill Ayers of the Weather Underground?
Bill Ayers, okay, so think of Bill Ayers was part of a domestic terrorist group, Bill Ayers, and then he became a teacher and a community organizer. He realized that violence is not going to be the way to bring out revolution. It's long-term indoctrination and organizing at the community level. And that's where he and his terrorist wife, Bernadine Dorn, opened up their home to this young, aspiring politician in Chicago named Barack Obama. They trained him. So this is where the lunatic fringe of the late 60s and early 70s, and we can brush them off as crazies from that period of time, many of them remained active, cultivating people through universities, through nonprofit groups, through political entities, for 50 years, cultivating generation after generation of people.
Yeah, so let me just jump in.
Now a lot of these people become prominent.
Yeah, let me just say, I'm from Chicago. So Bill Ayers has been a faculty member at the University of Illinois Circle Campus, and he's become a real powerhouse in the education program, so much so that my son's alma mater, Wheaton College, the famous Christian place where Billy Graham went, was using Bill Ayers education materials in their education department. Bernadine Dorn is a law professor at Northwestern University. That's how deeply embedded they are. We have to talk about Angela Davis. That name won't mean anything to a lot of people we're talking to, but we need to tell them, Mike, who she is and what her connection is.
Oh, and if only it still didn't mean anything to any of us. Yeah, this is somebody, and it's easy for people who do remember her to brush her off as this crazy communist agitator she bought the sawed-off shotgun that was used to blow off the head of a California judge. And what did she do? Fidel Castro brought her to Cuba and cultivated her. Brezhnev and the KGB brought her to the Soviet Union. She was given the Lenin Peace Prize at the Kremlin after she got out of prison for her role in murdering that judge, all in the name of social justice, of course. She was then given a scholarship by the East German Stasi-controlled Humboldt University, where she then got a PhD. So she could now be Dr. Angela Davis, and then got a professorship at University of California, Santa Cruz, where she develops Black studies and feminist studies and all of this. But what she also did there, becoming now a cultural and scholarly, in quotes, icon, like Bernadine Dorn, was to use that academic chair to train generations of lawyers and activists.
And she was personally kind of...
And that's where the Black Lives Matter movement came from.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And the Black Panthers. So Fidel Castro, she was a protege of Fidel Castro. And that's the reason we're mentioning her in this context. Before we run out of time, Mike, what does this have to do with the software? We're talking about the voter machines, Dominion, and also whatever the other thing's called, Smart Tech or Smart or something. What's the connection here? Smart-O-Matic. Thank you.
Well, we still have to establish everything. I'm waiting for Sidney Powell's full revelations. But what it appears to be is that the human intelligence and subversive networks that the Cuban government has put in place over the past 50 years. So people who are in their 20s now, they're in their 60s and 70s now, and they haven't stopped the fight. So you've got 50 years of that human organizing and political organizing with big foundation support has joined forces now with a political technology that the Castro Intelligence Service in Cuba had developed for use in other countries and it has now applied to our own elections. It's
and
the
Mike,
entire state of Georgia and hundreds of jurisdictions across the country.
And Mike, I have to jump in. And in saying goodbye to you, also you pointed out earlier this week to some of us that the Communist Party USA endorsed Joe Biden, Angela Davis endorsed Joe Biden, and the Communist Party did not run their own candidate this year, which was very interesting. All right, so we'll just leave you with that thing, that to think about. We'll put this article on our Facebook page. Mike Waller with Center for Security Policy. Thank you, Mike, for your time. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.